Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I'm your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie is here. We are going to talk a bunch of everything today. At the end of the episode, we're also going to make NASCAR playoff predictions. And on that note, our friends at NBC and USA Network want us to remind you guys that the chase for the cup continues as NASCAR's best head down to the Darlington playoffs to take on the track that is too tough to tame Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern on USA Network. I definitely should have read that before we actually hit the record button to see what I needed to actually read, but you know, that's the beauty of live reads. So I have trivia for you, and I have like a non-racing question. Where would you like me to start? You get to pick.
Start with trivia.
Okay. So one thing we'll talk about at some point today is Yuri Vips making his IndyCar debut the last two rounds in Portland and next weekend in Laguna. He is from Estonia. Can you name, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, the other Estonian driver to make, to enter an IndyCar race?
To enter an IndyCar race. Okay. No, I did not see that on Twitter.
Okay, good.
Trying to think of who the other Estonian drivers in the world are. I can think of some rally drivers. Who
does not look like he did any rallying in his career? I can read you the series he was in, since you're a little stumped right now. He raced in Formula Atlantics in the early 2000s, really 2004. Never consistently. 2005 was pretty consistent, and 2009 was consistent, but otherwise it was pretty inconsistent. Made a couple Indy Light starts in 2010 and 2011, and the season I'm talking about would be 2006 Champ Car. He also raced in four seasons in IMSA, 19, 20, 21, and 22 for Wolver Racing.
Okay, so he's in the prototype challenge, right?
Yes.
I remember his last name is Kazimets, but I don't know what the first name is. I cannot remember what it is, unfortunately.
Tonis Kazimets.
Okay. And how did he do in 2006? Was he any good?
No, he finished 16th at Portland, 12th at Cleveland, 15th at Toronto, 11th at Edmonton, and 17th at Road America.
Driving for like a backmarker team, or was it someone decent?
Rocket Sports Racing.
Oh, they were good in that period. For like a very brief period, they were good.
They were not good in 2006. They were good in 2003 with Tagliani, 2004 with Tagliani. They were decent. 2005.
Reinhard Rey drove for them, I think.
Yes, 2005, they had a podium.
And that's where the lawsuit came from, because it was Paul Genelozzi's team.
But they were never really like 2003 with Tagliani. They had a couple podiums. 2004, again, Tagliani had a win and a podium. 2005 with Timo Glock, they had a podium. And that was 2006, they had one podium with Mario Dominguez at Surfer's Paradise. So pretty, you know, pretty. Their 2006 lineup was Nicky Pastorelli for 5, 6, 9 races, Kazimets for a couple, Antonio Pizzonia and Mario Dominguez.
Antonio Pizzonia, he was an F1 driver.
Okay, that's great. I still don't know who he is.
Really?
No idea.
He was like, I don't know, a mainstream driver, I would think. He drove for, I think, Jaguar and Williams.
Sure. He drove for a Jaguar and Williams, but he also never completed a full season, so.
No, that's true. And I also think I was getting Rocket Sports confused with Roosport, who was way better.
Yeah.
Roosport was really good, and I don't know who owned that team or where they went, but they were the ones that had, was it Allmendinger and Justin Wilson?
Yeah, I think
that was who was really good in 2006.
But real quick on your Antonio Pizzania friend, pizza boy.
Pizzonia.
He retired in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of 11 races in 2003 with Jaguar, and then had a couple seventh places with BMW. So, you know, nothing. He's definitely not memorable, but also early 2000s. Yeah, I was distracted. I was in high school then, so I was kind of distracted. So anyway, let's go to the non-racing question. This one I'm stealing actually from Jeff Gluck's mailbag that he does with NASCAR drivers. I asked my girlfriend this last weekend when we were having dinner. If you were to do one household chore for every day for a year, but then you never had to do it again for the rest of your life, what household chore are you doing?
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. That I never had to do it again. Because there are a lot that I hate.
Yes.
But there are some that I actually enjoy doing, or that I don't mind doing, I guess.
Right.
But I'll just put on a podcast and do them. Like vacuuming, I'm cool with doing whenever.
Yeah.
I don't mind folding clothes. Michelle's terrible at folding clothes. She probably won't be happy at me saying that in such a public forum, but I'm way better at it than her. So I'll fold the laundry. But what I hate doing, if I had to do it every day. I am a household chore.
Yeah.
I'm really not a fan of putting clean sheets on the bed. Like when you have to make up the bed after you wash the sheets.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like doing that. So I guess that's something that I would do for a year and then never have to do again.
Yeah, that's a good one. I didn't think of that. I would say not doing dishes. Doing dishes is the one that like I could handle. I would say folding my laundry. I hate folding laundry, and that's what I said.
Dude, just send it over here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll bring my laundry with
me. It'd be weird if I fold your laundry.
Yeah. I mean, it could be weirder, but like let's not go there because this is a family podcast and we should stay somewhat family related. Okay, we have a really cool interview coming up in like 2 weeks that I'm excited to record, but that's all we're going to talk about it. So let's move on. And do you want to start with Yuri Vips? Oh, I guess we should start by reviewing Gateway.
Sure. And then we'll do Yuri Vips. Picks right here.
Yeah, what are our picks?
Predictions, not picks. Sorry.
Yeah, it's all the same.
For good weekend, I had co-host Malukas, who earned his second podium. Right, back-to-back podium. So I'd say that's really good. You picked Pato, who finished also on the podium in second. So we nailed that.
Yep.
For bad weekend, I said Connor, who finished 16th. But when I looked at the race standings, I think Lundgaard was in 17th and Rahal was in 20th. So I don't know where to put that. It's a very mediocre weekend, but I wouldn't say bad.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then Ed Carpenter.
Nailed
it. He was your pick for bad. And he finished 24th. And who did he smash into? Benjamin Peterson?
Peterson, yeah.
It's just like
plowed right into him at the start. Like, dude, you're starting in second to last or last place. Like, there's no need to go plowing into turn one like that. You're not going to come out of turn one and turn two in 15th place and make up all this ground. Like, just come on, Ed. What are you doing?
He costs himself money doing that, honestly. Yeah. Like, he's damaging equipment. But we also had a red flag question. There was not a red flag, so I win that one.
Yeah.
And I think that was it for our picks. It's a good race, I'd say. I was entertained by this Gateway race. I think Sarah wanted us to say that the curse is broken, which maybe by saying that out loud, it actually will return to spite her.
Yes.
But the fact that we had some rain delay stuff go on Saturday that affected qualifying, I mean, we got it in on Sunday anyway, but she said the fact that she wasn't there proved that it wasn't her.
That's incorrect.
That caused the wet weather at these races.
You can't say that, and you have to be at the racetrack for you to not jinx something. So if you're not at the racetrack,
like a dry weekend.
Yeah, if you're not at the racetrack, your feelings are completely invalid, and you know the point is moot. So, Sarah, if I had a rejection sound button right now, I'd be pressing it, but I don't have buttons on this recording device. So, yeah, it was kind of fun to watch everything. Like, you know, I watched IndyNext a little bit Saturday night. I watched kind of like the first half of the race, and then I did flip over and catch the second half of the NASCAR race at Daytona. But the qualifying Sunday morning, and then, you know, the race later Sunday afternoon made for like a really fun Sunday. And I don't know, did Michelle watch it with you, or was she, is that when she was leaving? Like, 'cause I know she's traveling for work.
The Gateway race?
Yeah.
No, she did not watch it with me. So she doesn't usually do that, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, fair. I did watch it with a girlfriend on Sunday. I don't think she was like super enthused with qualifying. But I don't know, oval qualifying when it's not the Indy 500, it's not particularly exciting. Like, it's just, it just kind of drones on eventually. Like, you're almost like, when you get to like the final five guys, you're like, all right, finally we can see like some guys put down some good laps and see what happens here. Other than maybe like Ferrucci almost losing it when he was done. And he was definitely primed to start top eight probably before he had that wiggle. I don't have his qualifying lap time.
Still did okay, I think, right?
Yeah, he finished 13th.
Where did he finish? Yeah, actually, it's not bad.
No, he had a good
qualifying time.
Was bad, but he also had a big wiggle, so he, you know, lost a lot of speed there. But she did seem to enjoy the race, and even mentioned to me, which I thought was pretty cool, that like there's a lot more that goes into an IndyCar race or a race weekend than she would have ever thought before. So I appreciated that. She did call Graham Rahal, Graham Rafael, at one point. I'm like, okay, like, at least you remembered who he was, for the most part. And Joseph Newgarden was Jeff Newgarden during the race, which I thought was very ironic, considering
that's his NASCAR name.
I thought it was very ironic because of our friends that call themselves Jeff, so, and they're both Newgarden fans. So, anyway, perfect. Yeah. So
she should keep making these nicknames. I like those.
Yes, I'll work on that. I don't know if we're going to be watching Portland live this weekend because I won't be home, but I'll at least get her to, I don't know, give me a new nickname from somebody she remembers hearing about on the broadcast. Special shout out to Kevin Lee. I thought he did an awesome job in the broadcast, at least during the race. Qualifying broadcasts, you know, they're just trying to get through the hour and 15 minutes or however long it takes. But during the race, he was really good.
Yeah, I agree. He's able to, I don't know, call the race in a much more straightforward manner.
Yeah.
I think I said to you, then maybe Lee does. Lee injects a lot more
excitement
of,
or
yeah, what the loudness. Townsend kind of, yeah, exactly. Just more, I don't know, I guess entertainment. Because I guess he's just used to doing the Olympics and stuff like that. He's just more bombastic in a sense. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but I just think Kevin does a really good job of calling it as almost a play-by-play type person, you know, as even the lead announcer. It's just a good job.
So the one question I have for you, so it was a pretty straightforward race. Obviously, there was, you know, four different strategies going on, so it was entertaining, but there was, you know, two cautions the entire race. I would say the driver who had the worst weekend is not up for debate. It's Takuma Sato. He had by far the worst race. Spun 64 times and hit the wall 12 times. But Gateway, and you know, maybe this year was a little hard because they did the Highline practice Saturday night and the race was Sunday afternoon. But God, by halfway through the race, the marbles offline were insane. How do we improve that? Is this a, and this you might not have an answer to this, is this a Firestone thing? Is it a Gateway thing? You know, do they need to be more aggressive about bringing out the sweepers when there is a caution? I don't think they did in great force when Sato spun at least halfway through the race or two-thirds of the way through the race. But is it an IndyCar thing? You know, I'm sure the drivers would say we need to change something with the aerodynamics slightly that might help tire wear in a way. So I don't know. And I think it could be a little bit of everything I said. I don't think there's necessarily one quick answer, but now that I've rambled on, what do you think?
I have two solutions, and okay. I don't think either of them will actually address this problem.
Okay.
The first one is put down PJ1, and I'm totally kidding because that would ruin everything and we could never go back to Gateway.
Yep.
The second would be to make this a night race again.
Yeah.
And I don't think that would fix anything with actual tire degradation, but you just have a probably
give them more grip,
less
at least.
Track temperature. So maybe it does actually help with less tire degradation.
Yeah.
I think that's the solution. It's better for the fans, and it's just, I don't know, better aero, cooler temperatures. It does a whole bunch for the racing.
Yeah, and I've heard that's the rumor is Gateway back to the night next year, which it should have never been off night. And I found it funny. Everybody's like, Gateway should be like the, you know, the IndyCar like throwback weekend, like NASCAR does.
Oh, yeah.
The spring Darlington race. Whoever is not on board with an IndyCar retro weekend need, or throwback weekend, needs to take a look at Colton Herta's Laguna ride. You know, that's a throwback to his dad's 96 car, 95 car. And
I think it's later. It's like 98 or 99.
Okay. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, and that car looks really slick. This would be such a great marketing thing to happen. It would bring in, you know, some fans that maybe aren't super close to the sport anymore, but also how many people out there are buying, you know, Colton Herta throwback merch right now? Just expand that through 25 or 26 drivers, and you've got yourself a couple $1 million in revenue sales from jerseys and hats and diecasts and whatever else you want to print up for old cars. So I hope IndyCar does something like that, because it's such a cool idea, and I don't know, I think it's pretty fun.
But it would trigger people who would then be reminded of the split.
You know what? If you can't handle the fact that it happened at this point, please stop watching. You know, that's like kind of mean.
I'm just picturing people getting angry and being like, I was watching the IRL. How dare you bring up a kart livery?
I actually saw on Facebook, of all places, some sort of debate going on about like the IRL versus kart. I don't remember what the actual debate was. I just remember thinking, this is nauseating that we're still having the debate about which one was better when the split has been over for 15 years at this point. And yeah, I mean, listen, it destroyed a lot, and probably, you know, we don't need to go into a discussion on that, but like, get over it. Just get over it. Please get over it. Or keep it to Facebook, because then I can make fun of you on Facebook.
Yeah, racing fans tend to hold grudges, it seems.
Yeah, you got that right. Okay, we'll move on from the race. It was fun. Portland is this weekend, but before we get there, Yuri Vips, he takes the Rahal seat for the last two races. Obviously, there's some problematic things with things he has said on Twitch, I think it was, or whatever, online. But can you look past that and give him a chance for at least the rest of the season to see how he does?
I don't think it matters if I can or not, because Rahal's already decided to do so.
Okay.
But I'm also just going to say that I don't know everything that he's said and everything that he's done. I do know that he was born in 2000. So he's in his very early 20s still.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'd like to think that most people probably regret things that they've done in their early 20s or maybe their late teens. That tends to be when you make some pretty silly decisions sometimes. Say, do things that you would never do as a fully mature adult, which who knows if adults are fully mature anyway, but
I'm not.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, exactly. That's the thing. But just, you look back at yourself and can cringe.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that I've said or done things like he did, but I don't know him personally. And I've had almost zero exposure to him in interviews or any of that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
I'm willing to give him a chance. I mean, it's the same thing with the Santino Ferrucci situation.
You stole my point.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
It's okay. You didn't know I was going to say that because we did not talk about this prior. But yeah, I mean, if we can say on the show like multiple times that Santino Ferrucci made some mistakes, learned from his mistakes, and moved on with his life. We should probably do the same for Yuri Vips. And I'm not condoning anything he might have said. I have no knowledge of, honestly, what he said or when, because I have, you know, the F2 world. And sorry, I just knocked my phone off my desk here. It's just not something I've paid attention to. But I've also heard he's like incredibly nice around the paddock and genuinely drivers enjoy his company. So, you know, let's just hope he learned from his mistakes. And if not, then after two races, we probably won't see him again. But and I have a gut feeling that he will be in IndyCar, maybe not with Rahal next year, but I kind of think he might be around still.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of cancel culture. I mean, yeah, like canceling some people need to be canceled that have not been canceled, if you know what I mean, that just keep getting away with things. Yeah. I'm not going to say who those people are or get into that. But that have shown a pattern of behavior and they still just keep being able to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
But for one thing to define you, I mean, it has to be pretty bad. And especially as someone who studies what I do, I study criminology, it's kind of would be very hypocritical of me to say that somebody who's, you know, said something and that's not a crime, right? Can't get a second chance, when I believe that people who've committed crimes should be able to get a second chance.
Yep. So Portland, it's funny. I make fun of Portland all the time because they have the world's worst media center and they have a new media structure that was built somewhere at the track. Obviously, I'm not going this weekend because I still don't feel like going out to Portland, but I don't know. Let's make some predictions. I don't have too much to say Portland wise.
I did have one other news point that we didn't address.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
I think it's because we're a little late to it, but I just figured it's worth mentioning again, is that Simon Pagenaud unfortunately has ruled himself out for the remainder of the season. And Tom Blomqvist is going to have the seat for Portland and Laguna, which should be cool because he at least knows Laguna from IMSA Racing.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm ready to see him get a bit of a redemption because Toronto went terribly, unfortunately for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's going to be nice. And I really hope that Simon, with this time to recover, is able to return next season, because this is the right move probably for his health. I mean, he's born in 84, so he's almost 40, right? He's not old by any means, but he's also not a 20-year-old driver. So he needs more time to recover probably. And it's also an individual process. And that was a vicious wreck. So I think he's in a good place in his career where he looks at this and says, I need to take this time rather than try to rush back into a car. And I respect that. I think everybody should respect that.
Yeah, especially because, you know, he's not winning the championship this year. He's probably, you know, they are probably not contending for race wins. So why not just get 100% healthy, hopefully come back next year, and, you know, just hit the ground running from the start of the year. But yeah, fair point there. Anything else, or should we go to predictions?
I think that's it. Let's get our predictions. I was just looking at Yuri Vips' record in kind of the road to F1, and it's pretty impressive. I mean, he's got wins in most of the categories that he's competed in. I want to say that this record actually even looks slightly better than that of Christian Lundgaard when we were kind of looking into his background when he was on the way over to IndyCar. So I'm excited to see what he'll be able to do. Obviously, in two races, I don't know if he can do that much, but
right.
Rahal's seen potential in him, clearly.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. So, okay, let's make predictions. Let's keep this simple. Let's start with probably the easiest prediction we can make for Gateway. Something's going to happen in Portland. Portland. Why do I keep saying I don't know where I am anymore. Let's go with the easiest. We're going to turn one at Portland. Something's going to happen. How many cars will be not necessarily out of the race? How many cars will be involved in the lap one, turn one drama. You know, let's leave it totally open for interpretation. And, you know, there might be other cars that, you know, take runoff. We're not going to count them if they just continue on fine. This is spin, contact, out, you know, flip over four times, end up with a, you know, something happening. And this is not an over, over under or anything. Totally, you know, you get to pick.
Okay.
I'll let you go
first.
I'll
go first on this one?
Okay. Yeah.
Then I'm going to say six.
Okay. Cars. In that case, I don't want to say five because then I'm just like Price is writing you. So let's say.
Didn't that guy just pass away?
Bob Barker?
Yeah.
Yes.
Rest in peace, Bob Barker.
Yes. And I love that he lived like as close to possible to hit 100 without actually hitting 100. Like, that's the most Price is Right way to go. Anyway, I'm going with three. We're gonna say it's gonna be a small impact at the back of the field.
Okay. The back of the field, all right.
Yes. Okay. On that note, let's see here. Let's go with who's having a good weekend.
Well, Portland. I'm gonna say Scott McLaughlin, who apparently has beef with our co-host.
Yeah,
over there.
Let's get through predictions and then we'll go back to that.
Okay.
So you said McLaughlin's having a good weekend. Okay, I will say Scott Dixon. I think he's gonna keep it up. I don't know if he's gonna win his third race in a row, but you know, he's definitely going
on the championship charge.
Yeah, he's going on the championship charge. All right, who's having a bad weekend?
Bad weekend at Portland. Wow, there's like a very loud motorcycle going by right now. I don't know how well you can hear that.
But I hear it's like something minor in the background, but not enough that like I'm distracted or anything.
I like was vibrating my house. Somebody has illegal pipes on that one, but bad weekend at Portland. Who is going to just be awful or run into bad luck at this track? That's tough, actually. But I'm going to say, I feel like I always say the same people, so I'm trying to think of someone different. I'll say that.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to take a moment to tell you about another podcast from Evergreen Podcasts and Sound Talent Media called Pit Lane Parlay. Pit Lane Parlay is the go-to podcast for IndyCar and motorsports-related news. Each episode, we discuss things like our favorite drivers, news clips from the last week, and generally giving each other a hard time about predictions we've made in the past and or life stories that have come up recently. We really have a lot of fun with it and really enjoy each other's company, and we hope you can come join us too. Join Pit Lane Parlay by following us on your favorite podcast today.
Willpower has a bad weekend, unfortunately. I don't know why I'm just saying that.
That's who I was going to pick. Okay, so in that case, I will say Alex Palou has his first slip up all year and has a sub-10th place finish and brings the championship battle next weekend into Laguna.
I am in favor of that.
Me too. On that note, towards the end of the race, co-host Malukas made it almost three wide, but instead kind of went in behind the low line and gateway. I think it was behind one of the MSR cars. I don't remember.
I think it was Elio.
Okay. And McLaughlin was high, but kind of coming down. totally fine. McLaughlin keeps going down. They bump. Both were fine. McLaughlin kind of lost some momentum, maybe lost a couple places, but you know,
he went way up the track, but he saved it.
They were, you know, they were both fine at the end of the day. After the race, Mr. McLaughlin was very angry, which I did not catch, but you know, I saw the exchange on Twitter, which like went from like kind of being silly and like fake social media beef last week with the whole Bus Bros thing, which I don't quite understand why we need fake internet drama, but this seemed very real. So I wanted to get, thank you for reminding me, your thoughts on the actual, I don't know, incident at hand.
It sounds like Scott McLaughlin actually went up to David on the podium and confronted him.
Okay.
Based on what I've heard. So I don't think anything's been resolved there. Was it a... I didn't really see a problem with that move. I think McLaughlin was moving down, as you said, and I guess he thought that was going to deter David from really putting the move on him, and it didn't. He was willing to just send it and make the move. And I think that's a risk you may have to take because he was gunning for that podium. He knew his car was good enough and he wanted to get that result. So I'm probably biased because of how much we enjoy having Mr. Malukas on the show and, you know, his personality in general, but just from knowing him, he's not a dirty driver.
Yeah.
And he respects Scott McLaughlin. So going into it with that perspective, I know he wouldn't do anything underhanded on purpose.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to call this a racing incident.
Time out. I totally forgot I had a Zoom filter on and I have ridiculous sunglasses on in the video filter right now. And we've been recording for, I don't know, a half hour, this 25 minutes. Totally just looked up and I went, oh my God, what's on my face? I agree. I actually, in real time, thought Malukas was going to get a penalty. And then, you know, they didn't call anything. They didn't, race control didn't review it as far as I could tell from looking back at the box score and everything. So I don't have an issue with it. These things happen on occasion. I don't think it was disrespectful on either driver's part to do what they did. So yeah, we can move on from that. I think it's time for the lovely world of Formula One now. So I'll let you lead this part because I have no interest in it.
Gotta love the vibe heading into this part of the podcast. Just making the listeners want to continue on.
You know, my sentiments on Formula One this year are pretty much word for word what Malukas said when he was on 2 weeks ago. And it's not like I'm going to not watch it or not talk about it, but like I definitely didn't watch it live Sunday morning. I made no effort to watch it live Sunday morning. Instead, I watched the replay Sunday night or Monday night and was fine with that. And that's probably how I'm definitely not watching it live this weekend. So, yeah.
Take that, F1.
Yeah. I know they care totally about my opinion.
I guess the first thing we should say is that I thought however many laps it was where the rain chaos was going on were some of the most fun, exciting, interesting laps we've had all season.
Sure. Yep.
F1, however, is making a huge deal out of it being a record for overtakes. When you have DRS still, don't talk about records for overtakes. Like you can't claim it to be anything special when you still have DRS and you have a gimmick that allows you to do overtakes. There's no, like, don't brag about it.
I don't think it matters anyway because they don't distinguish passes on track or passes when guys are, you know, pitting for new tires or pitting or passing because, you know, somebody spun whatever. So, you know, let's just say there's no rain and no chaos. there's probably a decent amount of passing anyway because Zandvoort kind of lends itself to that. But
going into turn one, Tarzan.
Yeah. Yeah, we're still not getting crazy. Yeah. Okay, continue.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that because I see F1 and people around F1 hyping that up, but I think it's kind of a bogus claim that they're really standing behind. Anyway, Helmut Marko has said that Daniel Ricciardo, who unfortunately broke some bones in his hand, will miss at least Italy and Singapore.
And because
his injury is complicated and needs time to heal. Yeah, he had surgery over the weekend. So who knows if this kind of killed his chance of proving that he deserves the AlphaTauri seat for next season. I have no idea what's going on there because Helmut Marko said something before the weekend about how Sergio is not 100% and they may replace him. He needs to step up his performance. And then was corrected after the race when Sergio, went off a few times during the race?
Yeah.
Lost a podium by speeding in the pit lane. What else did he do? He made some other mistakes. I don't know. Oh, and just basically was unable to stave off Verstappen, who caught him ridiculously quickly after he'd taken the lead.
He was down by like 13 seconds at one point. Yeah. Verstappen,
yeah. And then it was a couple laps.
Yeah.
That was insane. So anyway, I think somehow that secured him for next year. And that's what we're hearing from Red Bull now, that Perez is definitely in the seat. But I don't believe a damn thing either of those men say, and that's Christian Horner and Helmut Marko. So when we actually see an announcement, that is when we will know, unfortunately, who is going to be in the second Red Bull seat. There's a lot of speculation about that, obviously. And that, you know, lends to speculation about AlphaTauri as well.
Yeah.
But Liam Lawson did a great job, I think, on his debut and having very little experience. He'd never driven this current generation AlphaTauri. He'd only driven, I guess, last year's car. So right. I was impressed by his drive. I thought his pass on Charles Leclerc, even though Leclerc had a garbage weekend, absolutely horrific. And Carlos Sainz looked way better. I mean, I know there was some issues with Leclerc's car, but wow.
Yeah, not good.
Leclerc, we think we've made this argument before, and it's the same as Bottas, where once Bottas is in a headspace, and this is the same as Carlos Reutemann, I think I've literally wrote a blog about this when we were remembering to do that regularly.
What are you talking about?
That when anything goes wrong for these drivers, they just lose all hope or faith and go into this dark headspace where they have no confidence, and they crumble and fall. And there was a period in the race where Charles Leclerc was just getting passed over and over and over again. And he's the type of driver who I bet could have driven through. I don't know exactly what the damage to the car was, but I think he can pull the car up on his back and drive through a lot of that.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't have the mental strength or motivation to do it, he's not going to do it. And Carlos Sainz, I think, is just a lot more consistent. So it was interesting to see. So a little bit of maybe a changing dynamic, even though Leclerc is definitely the favored son at Ferrari.
Yeah, good point. I don't have too much in terms of the race other than the chaos at the beginning that I care about. Do we have predictions that we actually made for this? Because, you had predictions.
You refused.
I refused. Yes. I'm going to refuse to make F1 predictions until we have an actual genuinely good race that's not because of rain or some sort of ridiculous chaos.
Oh, can we make fun of some of the team strategy though for the tires?
Yeah,
that was so calamitous.
It's like, did everybody forget how to act?
Yeah, Leclerc's doing coming into the pits, and it looks like Ferrari has just screwed up again, right? Because they don't have the tires for him to come in on the intermediates.
Yeah,
but he apparently made the call at the last second and was saying it as he was coming down the pit lane. So they had to rush to bring the tires out to him. So it wasn't even Ferrari's fault this time. It's just, it's funny to me that some of the team, and George Russell's quote about, what the F, guys, I was forecast for a podium.
Yep.
I was cackling. That was so good.
It's very odd how it wasn't just all right, listen, we all expect Ferrari to screw up once during the race. That's fine. But it was everybody, almost every team had some sort of complete bumbling error.
McLaren, for sure. Unfortunately, they were my good pick
yeah.
for this weekend. And I mean, they weren't bad, but they were seventh and ninth, which I thought Norris and Piastri looked a lot more competitive with the amount of dicing they were doing
yeah.
throughout the day. So I kind of lose on that one. And Lance Stroll was my bad pick because that's kind of just an easy target at this point.
Yeah.
And I would say his finish of 11th was pretty bad when Fernando Alonso was as impressive as he was. He was actually making me think that he could compete with Max.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yep.
If only they had equal equipment. I think that would be the battle we need.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
The two of them going against each other. Oh my God. That would be so chaotic.
That would be so fun because I think they respect each other enough that it would be
oh yeah
hard, but not like the chaotic 2021 Hamilton Verstappen battles.
I agree. I do agree with that. There's some weird, whatever, needle, I think, as they say in Europe, between Lewis yeah. and Max. That's pretty much, I guess all the other news is about these flexi wings, which yeah. I won't get too much into that because
yeah.
it was overly complicated. But instead of doing stress tests or increasing the amount of stress they're going to do on the wing pieces to ensure that teams aren't getting away with flexi wings. Instead, now teams are going to have to submit drawings and cross sections. And they have to supply images that show the fixation of rear wing pylons to the impact structure, allowing the FIA to better understand how they've been designed and if any team has created parts in a way to flex and deliver an aerodynamic advantage.
Yeah.
They have to submit this by September 8th, which I guess is about a week from today as we're recording this. This seems dumb. The yep. FIA is going to take forever to review these anyway. And I'm pretty sure that teams could probably trick you by giving them this much time to just come up with something to fake.
Fake. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Yep, leave that to F1 to accuse teams of trying to circumvent the rules and then coming up with a way to enforce rules that will not actually fix the problem.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right. So, yep. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you have to do it by September 8th, but also, like, remember this summer we were supposed to have a decision on a new team by, like, June 15th, and it's mm-hmm. now the end of August. We're not going to have anything by the time August ends in 2 days, probably not by the time September ends. But anyway, we'll save that rant for the off season when
yeah, we have flexi deadlines too.
Yeah, we have flexi deadlines now, but are you making Monza predictions before we move on to the last thing?
Yeah, I have to keep my dedication alive.
Okay.
And actually, we did have one other piece of news that I wanted to get to, just continuing the Felipe Massa saga, because I think it's still hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely super entertaining to me. Basically, Massa's legal team has warned the FIA and Formula One management that the UK's High Court is going to intervene because they're just using delay tactics by arguing that they didn't have time during the summer break to, I guess, address his,
okay,
you know, matter, his problem. I think,
okay.
I think that is, well, let me just say a couple of things. Whoever these lawyers are, and I'm just going to, you know, couch this in, I'm going to say allegedly and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just, you know, theorizing. I don't know anything about this, obviously.
Sure, sure.
Seems like Felipe Massa is probably a pretty wealthy man. And he has a lot of money that you could take, even if you knew this was a losing case, as an attorney. So I actually, you know, I think they're just basically indulging Felipe Massa, if I had to guess.
Okay.
And they'll fight it out for him but I don't see this going anywhere. And who knows if the attorneys do, if when they took the case, whatever. But
fair
this
point.
Just seems like something that there's no way that a UK high court will intervene on this. This is not something that seems very relevant to for them to even wade into. It just seems like, why would they bother?
Fair enough.
But maybe I'm wrong. It's all just empty threats and political maneuvering.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When Felipe Massa fighting the FIA and Formula One management, you're going to lose.
Yep.
Sorry. But you're embarrassing yourself in the process and entertaining me. So please keep going. Monza predictions. Ferrari, I'm going to say, is going to do poorly.
Okay.
They looked terrible at Zandvoort. And I don't know what's going on, but when Ferrari looks bad, that's usually the start of a free fall into just chaos.
Yeah.
So we're going to say that. Oh, a couple of things, I guess, that we didn't mention. Pierre Gasly got a podium. That was cool. I don't think it actually shows or says anything about the Alpine team improving as much as that's the message they're trying to send out after that. That team is still in shambles and super chaotic. And this was just a lucky result for them to galvanize themselves around, but I wouldn't count on it, you know, actually signaling anything. Who's going to do well? I'm going to say that Alex Albon's going to have a fantastic weekend because Williams is actually showing progress, I believe. And we know that that car has high top speed and will do well at Monza. So let's just say Albon's going to do well. Ferrari as a whole is going to unfortunately disappoint the Tifosi.
Not surprised.
Oh, all right. Times.
Yeah, go ahead. Right. Go ahead.
I have those up actually. The Formula One Pirelli Gran Premio d'Italia. Practice one starts Friday, September 1st at 7:30 a.m., followed by practice two at 11 a.m. Practice three is Saturday morning at 6:30 a.m., followed by qualifying at 10 a.m., and the race is 9 a.m. on Sunday of Labor Day weekend.
Alrighty. Well, we have one more thing to get to. We will make some sort of graphic and put this on the Twitter before the weekend starts, hopefully.
You mean friend of the show Kiana will probably make a graphic for us because she's incredibly talented.
That's probably the smarter decision between the two. Okay, NASCAR playoff predictions. I have here the topics that I gave you yesterday. So, and we can have overlapping, you know, we don't have to pick four separate people or, you know, whatever. So if we have the same picks, we have the same picks. But who are your final four? Who's going to go into the last race of the year with a chance to win the championship.
I was thinking about this as I watched Daytona.
Yeah.
And my feeling of those who are performing well, you want me to give all four or just one at a time?
Yeah, just do all four.
Okay. So my guess, well, you wanted me to do one that was kind of a hot take, didn't you? Or like a dark horse?
Dark horse, yeah, but we're not there yet.
Oh, it's a separate pick?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the four that I think will actually be there at the end will be William Byron, because he just seems like he's dominating this season.
Yep.
I also think Martin Truex Jr. looks like he's performing really well. Joey Logano, as much as it pains me to say that.
Okay.
And Christopher Bell.
Okay. All right. I am going Byron, Hamlin, Kyle Larson, and Ross Chastain for my four. Okay.
All right.
Next Bell, pick.
Hamlin,
Larson,
and Chastain.
Chastain.
Okay.
Who is your champion of those four?
I'm saying Byron. I don't think you can pass up Hendrick this season.
Yes, I typically agree, but just to be different, I will say Denny Hamlin gets his long-awaited NASCAR championship. And lastly, this is not among the four you picked, a dark horse, maybe from the bottom eight of 16 that could be an upset candidate to make the final four.
Oh, from the bottom eight?
I mean, okay. Your upset pick is not going to be, you know, Kyle Busch, who's fifth in the standings. You know, that would be...
No, my upset pick was probably going to be Chris Buescher.
Oh, that could be an upset because he's kind of inflated in the standings with a late season charge. I think that's fair.
Yeah, that was going to be my pick because most of the people in the bottom eight, it would really disappoint me. I mean, there are a few that I would be happy to see make the final four there, but
yeah,
a lot of them I hope get eliminated before that.
Well, I'm going to go with Tyler Reddick.
That's a good choice.
Yes. So, yeah. All right. Maybe I'll text Kiana and see if she has time to make a graphic on the playoff predictions, but figured we would join the fray and do predictions on that. And that's all I got. Everybody enjoy all the racing this weekend. NASCAR is at Darlington, IndyCar is at Portland, not Gateway. I got it right that time. Formula One's in Italy. I think Formula E season's done. Nobody cares about Formula E anymore. E-scooters,
yeah.
E-scooters racing in my backyard. And Extreme E I saw Extreme E on Twitter and I remembered how much I don't care about that series. Anyway, have a lovely Labor Day weekend. It's my dad's birthday on Monday, so happy birthday, Pops. And
yes, happy birthday.
I don't think he'll be listening at this point in the episode because he'll be like, all right, you guys are rambling on. I'm going to shut you off now. And see ya.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.